Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Lucas McCurdy and Joshua Crisp, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by Markenta.
Welcome to this episode of Bridge the Gap podcast. We have a great show on tap today, and we've got even more guests on than normal, which is super exciting. We have Rick Taylor here from Silver Sphere, and then we've also got our superstar guest, Charles Turner, which we'll be getting into here in just a second. So Josh, why don't you help us out, get started on the show?
Yeah, so I am super excited about today's episode. Talking about technology, how it's changed in our industry, how it's changing our industry, and all the impacts.
Just a minor topic.
Yeah, right? Just a very minor topic. So we have brought in some heavy hitters. One is right beside me here, Rick Taylor, Senior VP at Silver Sphere, who we are so blessed to have as a sponsor of our podcast, making this possible. So thanks, Rick, for being here. I want I'll let you introduce yourself and tell more about what you're involved in the space. But I met Rick several years ago when started looking at technology solutions for some of our communities, and loved what they were doing, very forward-thinking. So again, thanks, Rick, for being here with us. Tell us a little bit about you, what you're doing, and then we'll start talking about technology.
Okay. Yeah, so Rick Taylor, been in the business now for 23 years, all in the technology side.
You started when you were 13.
Yeah, I wish that was true. I had hair when I started, though, I will tell you that. But just super passionate about the industry as a whole and the role that technology can play. And that really lends into so many different ways from an operational perspective. And this is one of the reasons why we have our other guest, Charles Turner, on here. He has done a fantastic job of being able to roll that into all aspects of the industry. And if you think I'm forward thinking, wait till we hear some of the things Charles has to say.
So. I can't wait. So so both of you guys, I'm going to be taking a lot of notes. I'm learning from this. I hope our listeners do as well. You have an opportunity much broader than me, because you get to talk to a lot of operators, a lot of developers, a lot of architects and engineers in the space that you're in. How is technology impacting senior housing design?
It's kind of interesting how it's taken so long for technology really to have a huge impact. But if you look at it from how things are being designed and those type of things, architect will tell you that technology's had a huge impact on his world and how he designs a building. But when it actually comes to operations, I think as an industry as a whole, we've been extremely slow to adopt technology. And some of those things are some of the reasons why we have Charles on to be able to talk about how he's been able to overcome some of those things and where other operators have not.
Perfect. So we'll be talking some about the design. We'll be asking Charles to weigh in on that. We're going to talk about the operational impact and the pros and cons, how consumers, how it's changed, how people are shopping. That's a big thing. And then internet marketing, the platform technology. So Rick, maybe you could tell us a little bit about really Charles, because I know you guys know each other, have worked together in some ways. So introduce Charles to us.
Yeah. So, Charles is the president of LifeWell, and we met, probably 4 years ago. On a project that he was working on, and have just kind of kept that relationship going. We talk at conferences and those types of things, and Charles is always one of those guys. If I want to know what the cutting edge, or actually I would say more even bleeding edge of technology that he's kind of looking at in the consumer market and how to bring that into senior living, he's my go-to guy. He's always been willing to have an open dialogue and discussion about what that looks like, how he thinks it's going to impact the industry, those types of things. And so I've always just enjoyed my time with Charles as the relationship's grown.
Yeah, no pressure.
You're apparently super awesome. So tell us about it.
Yeah, this is if y'all could like write this down and send it to my wife and my mother, that would be
So Charles, one
of the kids too.
one of the things that when we were sitting around talking about some of the questions that we wanted to get from you is one. I have a statement, and I want to know if you agree with it or not. That really good technology is disruptive. Do you agree with that statement?
I think there's more to that sentence that needs to be added. I mean, I think there's a lot of great technology, defining technology broadly, but I think, you know, technology is not just anything that produces ones and zeros, right? It's, I think we're kind of stuck in a, kind of an iPhone generation, and there's something wrong with the iPhone, but it's all about, you know, it's all about design and the user experience. And when it comes to our world, it's broader than a user experience. So I think technology is disruptive so long as there is, you know, the change management that goes along with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the kind of the point of me asking that question is just not too long ago at a conference and talking to some software people and some hardware folks and those types of things. And we were talking about the issue that we've had with folks actually adopting technology, and that the senior living industry is really good at acquiring technology, but not necessarily adopting it, because when they acquire it, all of a sudden they're making calls to tech support or the design side and saying, well, we're used to doing it this way and we want it to work that way, instead of it changing the way that they operate to make right. things easier. They want to go back to the old way.
We like the old way better.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, I always take, you know, technology and I categorize it. And there's two buckets of technology when it comes to senior care, right? There's technology that the resident or the senior interacts with, and there's technology that we interact with in order to improve the quality of life for our seniors. And you can probably say there's a third that's, you know, call it back office technology, but let's put that, you know, on the side for right now. But we tend to focus on those things that produce information, the kind of second bucket, right? Things that produce information that improve the quality of life of our seniors, not kind of iPads and things like that, that, you know, they're great, they're use cases, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of necessity for that.
That leads me into another question is, I think in the conversations we've had, you have brought in several different, I'll call it pieces of technology, right? It could be a wearable, it could be software, it could be some other hardware that's inside the building. And every one of those things kind of in today's world operates in silos. And so they're each an ingredient in a recipe. But in conversations that you and I've had before, it's like taking those things and adding them all together makes the recipe instead of just tasting a single ingredient. And how have you been able to take that data and have, one, how are you collecting it? Number two, how is it impacting your not only your operations, but the business side of all of your communities, as well as the resident experience?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think that's the big frontier. Cause I wish I could say it's, you know, there's a magic bullet in it, and everything's very easy, right? But unfortunately, what we're having is, you know, every time this is, you know, look at any industry and this evolution that brings it, that starts to adopt technology, there are all these silos that start to create silo data. And if, you know, if Rick is my resident and I have 10 things that produce data on Rick, how do I look at Rick holistically? Right now, it's virtually impossible to do it. Given our current technological state in our industry. Now, with that said, there are a couple of things that we're doing right now. We are changing our operating model. We're literally going through this right now because we have a lot of things that produce great technology. I can pull up data and I start banging my head against our walls, but just because we have, you know, a nurse that's like, we have things that will tell you if something bad may happen and you're not looking at this. So one of the things we're doing, we are disentangling our clinical operation from our resident care operation, so that the resident care director, there's a resident care director of our buildings that focuses on the resident holistically. that person should be the one that just says, hey, let me go to these 10 systems. And then let my nurse focus on, you know, passing meds, interfacing with doctors and things like that. And ultimately they've got to come together, but I want our resident care directors to interface with not only the nurse, but dining, with activities, with, you know, spiritual elements, whatever that may be. Now, that's kind of step one for us. That's an organizational change management. The second thing we're working on is, it's actually a side project that I'm helping work on. It's something called Veritage Solutions, which is the idea behind Veritage. It is exactly that. You know, we finally have an industry over the past few years that is starting to develop technology. You know, up until 5 years ago, maybe everybody had a nurse call system. Well, now everybody has an EHR system. Now maybe people have electronic check-in. And maybe now they have digital locks. Maybe, you know, these things are starting to come together. Okay, now how do we marry all this information? So the idea behind Veritage will say, we're going to take your technology and your technology and your technology, and we're going to say, you know, we're going to normalize what do you call a resident, and then we're going to be able to integrate data so that any new technology that comes into our space, there'll be a kind of a third party agnostic platform that'll be sort of industry standardized that says, okay, no matter what EHR nurse call, you know, whatever technology it may be, exercise equipment, whatever, it'll all integrate a single platform. And now I can then take, okay, now, you know, Rick's my resident. I can have a single pane of glass. What are those 10 KPIs for Rick that I can say, okay, these are the things we're going to look at for Rick. And then they would put a layer of kind of, you know, research-based predictive analysis on that that says, okay, we know what happens if Rick doesn't sleep. We know what happens if someone doesn't, you know, consume enough water, or they go to the bathroom more than their baseline, things like that. Then it starts spinning up predictive analysis that says, okay, an acute episode may be coming. Let's get ahead of this versus our industry right now, which I feel is just too read and react on acute episodes. Mm-hmm.
And so how are you, one of the things when I've had conversations like this, you have all of this data, and it right now, even if you had it, you'd have to dig deep into each one of those things and kind of try to figure it out. So what's your thoughts on how do you make that data useful, meaning that somebody doesn't have to dig down? My thought process always is, it's like a red light, a green light, and a yellow light.
Yeah. I mean, fortunately or unfortunately, you know, it's you have to bake this into workflow. The greatest technology in the world is going to do nothing unless you bake it into workflow. So, for instance, we've deployed, we're the first in the country, the world, I guess, to deploy this wearable technology, which it's fantastic. I mean, the stuff that it can do, the data that it produces on our residents, it's amazing. Now, all that being said, I can't rely on a nurse to go data mine that to figure out, you know, what information we can learn about our residents. So, you know, step one is, now that it has information, let's build baselines. Okay, this person normally goes to the bathroom twice a night. Oh, now they're going four times a night. Okay, well, let's at least generate a report that says, here are the people at a baseline. And that's helpful to an extent if someone reads that push report. But, you know, it needs to be intelligent enough to be able to articulate the difference between an acute episode and a trend. And so, okay, it's got, you know, like you said, there's got to be some red, yellow, and green going on. At the same point in time, you know, we also know as we adopt new technology, we have a lot of things that produce alerts, and we've seen alert fatigue. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we are constantly pushing our vendors to build more intelligence into the technology, and with some success, to be honest with you, but it's always a challenge. But, you know, how can you say to be able to do a lot of the thinking before it ever gets to a frontline caregiver so that they don't have to be running around with their heads cut off. And so we're in the middle of all that stuff right now. But at the end of the day, to answer your question, is it's got to be baked into workflow somehow. It's got to be part of the daily process. There's a huge change management component. And I always say, this industry doesn't have a technology problem. It has a that has a process problem, that has a change management problem. And as I think, as technology's industry starts to consolidate, you'll start getting more best practices. But I think it's going to take some time.
And I will say that that's not unique to just senior living. I've never really heard anybody put it that way, Charles, is that it's not a technology problem, it's a process problem. And so in our family construction company, we're facing this right now. We brought in a consultant to come and help us navigate our process, our operations, and advance us in technology. And the conversation we're having is that we can't implement this all at one time because it would destroy us.
Yeah. So, and Charles, one of the things that I'm interested to get your perspective on, we have a very diverse, listener group that is in urban markets, in rural markets, big companies, small companies. But one of the things when I've been in the secondary, the smaller tertiary markets, you still have a lot of what I would call mom and pop, single owned communities. And some of the challenges that I hear from them are, we can't afford the technology,
right?
Or we don't have an IT company to help us navigate that, or how do we implement that? So is there any experience you've had or some guidance that you could give to us and our listeners on helping a small community that maybe doesn't have all the the staff or even capital to deploy a lot of technology? How can they enter the space and stay relevant in the changing times?
Right. I think the first thing someone has to do is they have to pick a strategy. What is their strategy? What are they trying to do with technology? Because what I get frustrated with is y'all even said it's like LifeWell is the forefront of technology. It's like, well, I don't necessarily want to be known as the technology guys. I wanted to, be as we provide the best care in the market, right? Yeah. We use technology to do that. But, if we can do it with a big chief tablet and a number two pencil, we're going to do that. But with that said, is one of the things we've learned over years is you can't do and try everything. For us, our strategy is, what technology can we implement that is cost effective that helps us take care of our residents better? We get pitched a lot of virtual reality or iPad app or apps or things like that. These are all very interesting. And there are use cases, like I said, but again, it's not, we'll look at them, but it's not part of our core strategy. So if you're a smaller community, what do you want to do? Like, if you want to say, I want to care for our residents better, then start focusing on those things that care for our residents better. And so there's actually the interesting thing about, if you look at what's happening in the technological landscape, for instance, the wearable devices that we have, if you want to do anything wearable in the past, you had to have not only your nurse call infrastructure, but you had to have a Bluetooth infrastructure, infrared infrastructure, to support this stuff. Well, Wi-Fi is getting to the point where it's so sophisticated now where you can do all this stuff off of Wi-Fi. So if you have a sophisticated Wi-Fi system, which you should have anyway, so you shouldn't even get in the game without it. So if you have that, there's a lot of stuff that piggybacks it off of that. And frankly, it's not really much more expensive than your antiquated nurse call system. So, the price of technology is coming down and down and down as your infrastructure requirements are becoming less and less.
Super fascinating. So as we may have shared with you at Bridge the Gap, our podcast that just recently been launched, our mission is to inform, educate, and influence. I feel like technology has a lot of potential to help this situation, to help further our knowledge base. What are some ways that you think technology can influence those three buckets of informing, educating, and influencing our industry?
So that's interesting question. It's kind of broad. So like the question is, who's the audience for the information that you create? For us, I guess it comes down into a handful of buckets. It's probably the resident themselves, their medical and support community, as well as their family. Taking a step back, if you look, one of the reasons we have the technology strategy that we do, again, how do we produce information about our residents, is that you know, we firmly believe, if you look what's happening in the medical community, the medical world, senior housing, whether we like it or not, is going to play a part in that. The world's going to wake up and realize, you know, assisted living and memory care is actually a lower cost of care than sending someone to a nursing home. How do we do that? Okay, that's got to get figured out. But the only way, I think our bet is the operators that win in the end are the ones that can say, here's how we quantitatively show how we care for our residents, align ourselves with that medical community. So the medical community says, okay, I want to give my residents, my patients, to discharge them or recommend that they go to, I'll say, a LifeWell community, because I can quantitatively see how they care for my patient, and that will limit the readmission that comes back. And so that's everything we're doing in LifeWell, as well as that's really the point of Veritage. If you can get everything integrated, then you can say, okay, here's a single pane of glass, the medical community that says, here's how we're taking care of, you know, Mrs. Jones, my resident, and let's align ourselves together so we can work together to improve the, you know, population health for the senior market. And then, of course, when you get into how, you know, we want to lift that veil between, you know, how we care for residents and their families. You know, we want to be relatively open kimono. Here's the good and the bad, what's going on, versus, you know, mom's not doing that great today, or she's doing better. It's like, you know what, she's having sleeping issues. We're investigating that, and we know that it's causing some behavioral changes, so we're going to attack what's causing sleep as an example.
So the best offense is a good defense. So you have the data, and you can use that to have communications with the family members instead of being scared of the data. And like you hear so many operators say, I'm not sure I want to know that. Well, I mean, yeah, that's really the that's how you have an impact on the resident experience.
It's a debate we get into all the time, and you know, I have to be very careful about how aggressive we are in deployment, because, you know, there's that one school of thought that says, if we have the data, you know, it's like the same thing of having cameras in the corridors. You know, if I have the data and I don't need to do anything about it, it puts me in a higher liability. I would argue that if we have the data and we can affect care, that's better. So, you know, case in point, we've had several instances where, you know, it's either employee theft or an alleged employee theft. But because of how we do access control versus, and RFID door locks, well, we have a pretty good audit trail of who went where, and we were able to figure out what exactly happened. In this case, we terminated an employee. And she threatened a lawsuit. It was like, well, here's the video of her going in here, and here's the number of doors she went through to get there exactly when this alleged incident happened. We never heard from the attorney again. So I think more often than not, it's helped us. But there's also there's that risk. I mean, you have to – that's why training is paramount.
So one thing – and switch gears a little bit here, because we've dedicated several of our podcasts to talking about labor – challenges. That seems to be like what a ton of everybody's talking about. Right. So what have you guys, what are you doing? What have you done? What do you have plans to do? Do you think that technology can play a part in helping to battle kind of the labor crisis that everyone's talking about?
I think on the margin it can. I mean, for us, we're often able to recruit. It's easier for us to recruit because we have this technology emphasis, and people at an abstract level think that's, quote, you know, cool. But when you get down into it and they actually have to implement it and use it, sometimes that's when the rubber hits the road. But especially if they've been in the industry for a while and change management's more difficult. But there is some advantage for us that we've seen on the margin. The other things, you know, there are things that, you know, our technology right now, we're not necessarily focusing on employee retention necessarily. However, with that said, is, you know, we know there's got to be a better way to prevent employee burnout. So, you know, with our wearable devices, it actually has point-to-point communication. You know, right now with a traditional nurse call system, you press that button, you don't know if this is an emergency or Mrs. Jones just needs her channel change or something, right? So you have people running around, you get alert fatigue, your performance declines, you know, your response times decline, versus, okay, if I could communicate directly with that resident, say, is this an emergency? He says, no, I just can't find my TV remote. Okay, I'm dealing with someone right now. I'll be there in a little bit. Our hope is that by being able to communicate better, we can actually improve our workflow a little bit more and hopefully, again, on the margin, improve some burnout. In terms of, you know, reducing hours reducing burnout or improving labor costs, I think, you know, as we can quantify how we care for residents, we can also, you know, we're adjusting our pricing accordingly so that we can fluctuate our labor, excuse me, as needed, more acutely than, you know, their every 30 or 60, 90 day assessment.
So you bring up a question in that, that I know Josh and myself are interested in, is that any conference you go to, they say the one part that we're missing in this is the low middle income, you know, options for senior living. Do you think, based on the conversation that you just had with us, is there a role in technology there that allows a low to middle income model to be profitable?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, as Medicare and Medicaid gets more involved in home health, there's a lot of, you know, kind of in-home monitoring solutions that are, I think, going to become more and more robust, where, you know, telemedicine and telehealth, where you can monitor someone remotely. I think there's going to be use cases for those, but I think that has to still get more aligned with, you know, on the payer mix. It is. Actually, I say that. I think it actually really is. I think really it's the medical community. You know, we talk to telemedicine, telehealth groups all the time, and everyone wants to talk about their technology, and it's really cool. It sounds great. But then I'm like, okay, who's the doctor on the other end? What is that process on the other end? How do I schedule something? How do I call for an acute episode? Is there a pool of doctor? Like, how does this work? Mm-hmm. And every time you're kind of like, well, you know, the technology is cool. Like, well, it is. What's the process? But the world's getting there. And I think from a population health management standpoint, I think you're going to see more of that. It may not be as much in sort of the congregate care world as we see, but or maybe it will. And maybe it will be, but it'll separate out kind of what we do and the care side. The care side will come down, but I think there's some in-home solutions that will start to happen. I don't believe staying in the home forever is going to be a viable solution, but I think it'll help bridge that gap longer for someone who's relatively independent to someone who really needs assisted living. I think that'll help bridge that financial gap for a time.
Okay. Well, as we are, I just got a few minutes left here on the show. Wanted to ask you one of our last questions. Just, there's a lot of data coming in from all these different systems. How are you being able to basically mine the data that's coming in? They may be coming in their own cloud, or, you know, do you have a single source cloud that's able to blend the data? Any insights that you can help our listeners there?
Yeah, and backing you up from that question is, it helps to have, we have a guy, right? A guy named Sean. He's fantastic.
Everybody needs a guy.
And his job is to make sure that we develop KPIs for our community and that we publish how people are performing against those KPIs. But it's not easy, because, like, we want everybody to be cloud-based. You can't always be cloud-based. Or sometimes things aren't cloud. Some legacy systems you have to have aren't cloud-based. So you're still into a point of independent mining of these data sources, which is, again, why, you know, going back to what we were creating at Veritage, this side venture, which is taking a lot of – is getting a lot of traction with a lot of different people from all over the technology providers, care providers. It does that. So, okay, so I need a direct feed off of this one. I can do a cloud off of this. I can do, you know, I can tap into the back end of whatever HR for this. And it normalizes and consolidates everything. And so, the product went live in December, and we're just now implementing all the integrations right now on our platform, and a few others are as well. So I can have my nurse call system, which is as a local server, my exercise equipment, which is cloud-based data, my EHR, which is a remote, you know, a remote in, and you know, I AxiShield, which I think is also cloud, right? So it's just with sources of data, different technologies that'll blend it in.
Interesting. Well, I think the cool thing about this topic of technology is it's never ending, right? I mean, we could pick this back up in another 30, 60, 90 days, and there'll be more to add. It's a mine that we could never really totally find the bottom of. So we'll definitely check back in. Charles, your time is has been super valuable to us. We are so grateful for you, so grateful for your insights. And we want to continue the conversation online. We're going to have links in the show notes back to our social channels. And I'm sure that our listeners are going to have some questions. And believe me, we'll engage back with them. So after you listen to this podcast, it's not over. We're going to continue that conversation. And so look us up, Bridge the Gap, and we'll make sure that we get back with you. Another great episode, Charles. Thank you so much. And that'll close us out for today. Appreciate
it. My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me. This has been fun.
All right. Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.